Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Trump is back and in a big way, again defying the media, the pundits, and the polls. Trump attracted a wide coalition of voters. It would seem American liberalism is in crisis. What will Trump do with his unprecedented second chance? Crosstalking Trump, I'm joined by my guest, Kyle Anzalone in Norton. He is opinion editor at antiwar.com, as well as co-host of Conflicts of Interest. In Tampa, we have Hassan Shibli. He is a lead attorney and founder of Muslim Legal. And in Dallas, we cross to David Walalu. He is a geopolitical analyst, author, and veteran. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Kyle, I think there's a lot of conclusions that you can draw from this election outcome. Certainly, these emotions are abound everywhere. Clearly, Donald Trump humiliated all of his opponents and his detractors and his adversaries. But it's not that simple moving forward. And all of us here look at foreign policy more than most people do. So what are your initial reactions? Trump is back.
Well, my first reaction is just that this election probably didn't have very much to do with foreign policy, maybe on the margins, and particularly in a state like Michigan. The war in Gaza may have had some effect on the election. But generally speaking, I think the biggest impact on the election was the economy. Every time I go to the grocery store, it's at least $50, and that's if it's a small shopping trip. If we're doing a weekly trip for the house, it's $150, and now that we have a newborn, $200 most of the time. It's devastating every single time you go to the grocery store. And just, I live in a rural area in a blue state, and the support for Trump was palpable around here. There was far more people with Trump signs and very loud and proud about their Trump support. And so I think it had far more to do with cultural issues, immigration, economy, than foreign policy. But certainly the foreign policy and the wars didn't help Biden at all, and allowed Trump to run as the peace candidate somehow.
Hassan, it was different for you in your community, and I'm very proud of your community for saying, well, I want something for my vote, and I'm willing to withhold my vote or vote for the other guy if we don't get what we want. I think that's how politics should run. I think too many Americans have just been accepted that they're in one tribe or the other, and they have to go along. There are certain red lines, like genocide, that you do not cross, okay? Unfortunately, and I'm agreeing with Kyle here, and somebody like Kyle is on the beat day in and day out at antiwar.com. That's where most of his material that I read come up, and he's absolutely right. It was on the margins, but margins count in a tightly contested election. Go ahead, in Tampa.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is clear that Trump won regardless of the foreign policy issue, but Kamala certainly lost the support of the American Muslim community because she is a genocide enabler. She's part of this administration that has the blood of thousands and thousands of innocent children on their hands. Now, look, as an American, I wish it was the genocide issue that determined this election. Certainly, it saddens me that that wasn't the primary issue, but it was an important issue. I mean, certainly Trump won Michigan. Several states where there's sizable Muslim populations flipped, and I think the Muslim community played an important role of that. I don't think we could take the full credit, but I do think we sent the Democrats a powerful message. The majority of American Muslims voted in favor of Biden in the last election. That completely switched. They either went third party. A lot of us went third party to send a message. Some even voted for Trump because our rationale is it would be a great shame on this nation to allow an administration that was in power during genocide to be reelected. What kind of message and precedent that send?
Well, Hassan, repeatedly on this program, I said it was a black pill election. I didn't support either candidate for the very reasons that you just mentioned here. David, it's very popular to say, that, particularly in American politics, is voting for the lesser evil. I think that was the case. A lot of people voted for the lesser evil this time. It actually has resonance. David, go ahead.
Well, I agree with both guests, with Kyle and Hassan, and spot on. As an American, you look at it, who are you going to vote for? The lesser of the two evils, yeah. Of course, the issue of immigration, but also there is another issue of the anger that Americans felt towards the Democrats, for that matter. So the whole idea of voting for Trump It was a reflection of the anger of the population here, given the failed policies we have embarked on, especially Biden, supporting Israel in its genocide against the Palestinians, defenseless Palestinians, that is. So that's one of the issues. Second one has to do with where things are headed, economically speaking, in the United States. And at some point, you look at the $35 trillion plus in the national debt, and Americans, like Kyle mentioned, and he's spot on. I go out to the groceries, I see where the prices are. The government is lying about the inflation. There is no easing up of it. And the life of average American is getting worse. We're not supposed to be, while at the same time sending our tax dollars to Ukraine and Israel.
Yeah, but David, didn't you want to see the first woman of color president? I mean, wasn't that an important issue for you?
No,
Of course it wasn't.
I don't care either. I know, but I care about an average citizen who's wondering, standing in his or her kitchen, wondering, do I buy medication or do I buy dinner? I can't do both.
Okay.
As a rich nation, we can't be in that position, let alone wasting our tax dollars on Ukraine. What for? What are we getting in Ukraine? A war that we created. You know, most Americans have the right to know where their tax dollars are spent on. That's to me what a right citizen does, and when he or she challenges the government by holding it accountable.
So we're going to see now
what Mr. Trump's going to do, even though I didn't vote for him. I didn't vote for either. I don't believe in both parties anymore. But we shall see, mainly in a foreign policy, what he's going to be doing.
You know, Kyle, because I think, and I'm hoping here, is that this kind of postmodernism, identitarian nonsense is going to go to the wayside for the very reasons that all three of you have already said on this program. I mean, you can have your woke ideas, but it doesn't fill your belly, does it?
Yeah, it ultimately comes down to the economic issues, and people are going to, like you said, vote with their stomachs. And I think that was probably the real deciding factor in this election, although, as the other guests have said, the war issue is important and could have mattered in a much tighter election. If the polls were correct, that vote may have mattered. I think the polls were off again, and that's why Trump won by such a large margin. But, yeah.
You know,
and I also think Trump's America First messaging is very important. And it's something that we actually, as American Muslims, we celebrate. America should be first for Americans, and our tax dollars need to stay at home. And the problem you have right now is America's economy was heading in the wrong direction. Meanwhile, we're sending billions and billions of dollars that translate into trillions of dollars in losses when you account for interest and inflation. For Israel, for Ukraine. It just doesn't make sense. We're causing conflict abroad, and we're depriving people of resources and tax dollars at home. So it's a disastrous recipe, and I think that's why Trump's America First resonates. But let's hope he actually sticks with it and is actually loyal to it and keeps our tax dollars at home, fixes our problems at home, and stays out of problems overseas.
Well, David, I guess, you know, that's where we are right now. I mean, I'm very supportive of an American First agenda because it will stop interventions and it will actually give the American people the peace dividend that they've been denied since the Cold War. David, I'm going to present something to all three of you, and it might be very naive, but sometimes naivety gives you hope, is that, as Hassan said, you know, the Muslim Arab community in the United States, particularly in certain districts, they played a key role. Will the Trump administration take that on board and say, these people, you know, they made a difference. They made a difference for this campaign by not supporting the opposition. Will that be taken into consideration at all? David.
Well, there is one aspect that I can think of which will become almost a personal of sort, is that Trump's daughter, she's married to a Lebanese-American billionaire. Now, here is what most Americans do not know, is that the Michael Farrell, his dad is a billionaire. He's the one who also supports Donald Trump behind the scenes, which means what? That means that Trump will have to hold his promise because he's expecting a grandson of half Lebanese. So, and given the relationship that exists between Netanyahu and Trump, most likely you might see an end to the slaughter that's taking place in Gaza, because it will be a political victory. The same arguments can be made about the Ukraine conflict, because already Trump made it clear that we're gonna have to stop funding this money to this corrupted Zelensky? Till when? And second, what are we there for? Why are we creating? Why did we create the problem to begin with and drag our nation financially along with Europe into all this? So it become, I'll be watching at least the first 100 days as to what Mr. Trump's going to do, or President Trump, that is, since he's officially a president, what is going to be the winner regarding these two issues, the Ukraine conflict and the Gaza war.
But, Kyle, we all know the narcissism and the ego of Donald Trump. He has an opening here. He could really surprise people. He has the mandate, and he will be a lame duck. He's not going to have to worry about billionaire donors. As far as I can tell, he doesn't have any particular strong interest in any foreign issue. He wants the Nobel Peace Prize. Kyle.
Well, I agree with you with that's what Trump wants. I think the problem in what we saw with Trump in his first term is personnel really does equal policy. And so Trump could want to get out of Syria. He could want to do a deal with Kim Jong-un. I mean, there was his Nobel Peace Prize right there. The best opportunity that you could imagine, a real peacenik in Seoul who really wanted to make a deal with his neighbor to the north, and Trump squandered the moment by allowing John Bolton to show up to the Hanoi summit and demand a Libya model for North Korea. I mean, that was just completely absurd. Or his desire to get out of Syria. Mattis resigned and his staff lied to him about how many troops we had there to keep the U.S. in Syria. And so if he puts Mike Pompeo, Tom Cotton, Marco Rubio in his administration, then I don't have very much hope. And I think we essentially end up with the policies of his top donors, like Miriam Adelson, who wants him to annex the West Bank. At the same time, this is Donald Trump, who will take $100 million from you and stiff you. And so I don't think we necessarily need to be black-pilled on the issue. I think there's a possibility that if we get the right people in place, it could be okay.
Hold that thought. We have to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on Trump's return to the White House. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaBelle. To remind you, we're discussing Trump's return to the White House. Okay, let's go back to Hassan in Tampa. When a major political party suffers this kind of defeat, I mean, and again, I'm not here as a Trump booster. I'm far from it, okay? But he had all of the media, the establishment, most of his own party against him. I mean, it was, you know, all hands on deck, and he came up on top. And we know the policies that people rejected. Again, we're all in agreement here, unfortunately, in this cycle, the foreign policy didn't play enough of a role. But what kind of postmortem would they have to go through? Because, you know, hours after the election result, I just see them playing the blame game. They blame Arab Americans, Muslim Americans, blacks, Latinos. They blame everybody except for themselves. And they did this to themselves, okay? What kind of postmortem do you think that they would even consider? Go ahead in Tampa.
I mean, the only hope they have is if they really introspect and determine whether they want to reflect the will of their constituents. The problem with the Democrats in particular, and the Republicans to a great extent, but especially the Democrats, is they really don't reflect even their own base. I mean, the 80% of Americans who are Democrats are against what Israel is doing in Gaza. 80%, the vast majority of Democrats are horrified by what Israel is doing, but only 8% of Democrats in Congress are against what Israel is doing. The Democratic institution doesn't actually care about the people. They care about a small elite group of their donors. They're in an ivory tower. They want to set false standards of what morality is, which is actually completely contradictory to what the American people feel and believe. They made the whole campaign really about a loose woman's right to kill their unborn child, while we have thousands of Palestinian babies killed over the last year and they've done nothing about it. It's a lot of hypocrisy. Their only hope is to wake up and recognize the American Muslim community vote won't be taken for granted. Minority votes won't be taken for granted. We will not just give them a free pass and we will hold them accountable. And we're willing to withdraw our votes no matter who the opponents are if those running for office don't reflect our beliefs and our values, values of human rights and basic decency.
You're saying return to grassroots democracy. Oh, wow, what an amazing idea. I hope they take that on board. You know, David, you know, we have people in Trump's orbit talking about dismantling the state, the largesse. Why don't they just maybe let's like put controls on foreign donors, okay, outside influences. I mean, Israel, Saudi Arabia, I could go on and on. I mean, you can't walk through the Capitol and not see lobbyists representing foreign governments. That would be a good start, too, don't you think, David?
That is correct. If anybody wants to learn more about this as one who works in Washington, you need to go to the 38th Street and you will find out where how money is funneled through. I mean, our system, let me just say this as an American, it pains me to say it, but I don't shy away from the truth. Our system is corrupted to its core. And for those analysts now in Washington that are saying, oh, Mr. Trump's going to not be constrained by both the military and security, they are delusional. If you don't understand how the system works and the hidden hand behind it that manages the trajectory of the government policies, be they overseas or domestically, then you don't know much about what's going on inside the United States. Most Americans, average Americans, worries about what's for dinner. He or she is not going to be thinking about these foreign policy issues. And this is where you're going to see, you're already seeing when it comes down now to foreign policy, at least an area that I am very familiar with, it's going to be now the question of what can he do regarding the tensions that already exist on the global stage. You look at the three major issues that he has to confront immediately: the Ukraine, the Gaza, and the trade with China. And for the idea of that, well, now that Donald Trump 2.0 is going to be different, yeah, it will be different in a sense of him trying to accomplish what he couldn't accomplish in the first term. But there are limits inside the Washington Beltway as to what a president can do. President has no power. Let me just say this straightforward. There are the entities behind the scene that manages the direction of what U.S. foreign policy ought to be. And that's what we're going to be, at least what I'm going to be looking for, the signs.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, Kyle, when Trump gave his victory speech, Jared Kushner was on the stage. And I'm just asking myself, I mean, what's going to change? Because, you know, again, not speaking as a Trump booster, but I mean, I liked a lot of his ideas in his first administration, but they never were enacted, okay? And, you know, personnel is policy. You've already said that on this program. So what are you looking for? I mean, if Marco Rubio is being considered for Secretary of State, then, you know, let's just throw in the towel on the first day.
Well, I agree with you. If Marco Rubio gets Secretary of State, we are in real trouble here. Looking for the good news, of course, Jared Kushner was on the stage. He is a member of Trump's family. A man who also was on stage was J.D. Vance, who said in the days before the election that sometimes American and Israeli interests are not aligned and America doesn't have an interest in going to war with Iran. And so with, you know, some thinking like that in the administration, well, maybe things could go in the right direction. I don't necessarily think that Tulsi Gabbard is going to be the Secretary of State or Secretary of Defense. And it's not that she's an anti-war person or a peacenik or anything like that, but her initial instinct isn't to go to war. And having more people around the president like that's important. Apparently, Thomas Massie is being considered for Secretary of Agriculture, which really doesn't have anything to do with foreign policy, but that would mean he has the ear of Trump. And I mean, this is somebody who's definitely against funding Israel and giving them billions of dollars in arms every year. So if we want to look for some bright spots, I think we could find them. And, you know, one of the positive things with Trump is, unlike with Kamala, where essentially you're just going to get another cabinet full of Blinkens and Austins and a national security advisor like Jake Sullivan, maybe even a Liz Cheney. With Trump, you could end up with Pompeo and Rubio, but you could get some real wild cards in there, too. It's important to remember that Douglas McGregor was in his administration near the end of his term, and that's part of what facilitated the eventual exit from Afghanistan. It was too late, it was clunky, but at least that deal got done, and that's important.
Well, I'm supporting Max Blumenthal for Secretary of State, but I'm, you know, that's his hopeful thinking. I hope you see this, Max. Okay. Again, going back to personnel, what we saw in the first administration is that Trump wanted to get out of Syria and they blocked him. Okay. I worry that's going to happen again. I mean, if he really is going to be at his word, he's going to have to go in and fire a lot of people to you know, thin out that top layer if he's going to want to get done what he wants. I think he does. You know, for better or worse about Donald Trump, he is this is his last term. He wants legacy. He's going to have to really shake up the works if he wants the legacy that he wants. Go ahead.
Well, and we all know he enjoys saying you're fired and firing people. So hopefully he fires the right people that need to be fired. And he avoids making the same mistakes of his previous presidency. I mean, in his previous presidency, he appointed people like Steve Bannon, rampant Islamophobes that have made a career out of promoting fear and hate of the Muslim community, and that have caused unnecessary damage. And honestly, that may have had tremendous negative impact on his relationship with the Muslim community. Now, the Muslim community sort of turned around and said, listen, Trump's rhetoric can be crazy. Sometimes the people he appoints can be crazy. But really, we had relatively little conflict during his time in office in terms of wars and violence. The economy was doing a lot better. So they came back around and they embraced him. You found Muslims supporting his candidacy. I myself and many of my colleagues, we went third party this time. But some Muslims went out and stood by him in this election, and he thanked them. So he went from saying Islam and Muslims hate us to actually welcoming Muslim voters and Muslim support. And I hope he better engages and also understands that the American Muslim community is a powerful swing vote. And it may be important to have their support to continue Republican leadership. And frankly, a lot of Muslims are much more aligned with Republican principles and family values than they are with the Democrats. So maybe we see a shift of Muslims going from Democrat over the last decade to now maybe be more aligned with the Republican Party, if the Republican Party can be a party of peace, not war.
That's it. You've really hit the nail on the head here. David, during Trump's victory speech, he promoted peace. He's very, very dramatic about it. He is a man. He said he wants to be a man of peace. He doesn't want to start new wars. He didn't start any during his first administration. That's a kind of a glimmer of hope there. But he's going to really have to act upon it quickly. And it's already been mentioned here, Ukraine, the genocide in Gaza, the assault on Lebanon. And of course, you've already mentioned the trade issue with China. He's going to have to start moving fast if people are going to believe him. Yeah. Or we're just going to have a continuation of the Biden administration. And that's what I worry about. Go ahead, David.
Well, that's all, Peter. That's all depends on who he's going to surround himself with. You know, I kind of, I'm already starting to think in terms of what Elon Musk, for example, will he play a role into the Trump's administration? That's to me a question that I've been thinking about, because somebody that's going to bring that kind of business mindset, but will it work? We don't know. I don't know. It will be interesting to see who he's going to surround himself with. Like what Kyle mentioned and Hassan mentioned as well, as to who's going to hold the key positions like Secretary of State, like Secretary of Defense, and so on. And those will be key positions that will at least have the president's ear to at least guide him into the right direction. But if you bring in the likes of, let's say, Marco Rubio or Pompeo, no. It's not going to bode well. At least for me, knowing what I know as far as how things work inside Washington, behind closed doors, it's remained to be seen. Even though I just I hope for the two wars to stop, the Ukraine and the Gaza at least, and that then
we can be very cynical. End the wars, Trump. You can get the credit for it. End the wars. You get the credit. I hope that is appealing to him, Kyle. Between now and January 20th, it's a long time. What's going to happen with U.S. in Iran? 1 minute. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, I think this is the really bad news here, is that Netanyahu probably sees a ticking clock. He's apparently been told by Trump that he would like the Gaza war wrapped up by the time he takes office. And so that could mean that Netanyahu just hits the accelerator pedal on the genocide and ethnic cleansing there. And it also means that Netanyahu may see Trump not as somebody who wants to necessarily start a war with Iran, but if he comes into office and a war with Iran is ongoing. He's going to want to be the president that finishes the war with Iran, which means, just heavy carpet bombing of Iranian cities and things like that, and really escalating the conflict. And so I think there's a real threat that by the time Trump takes office, there's a screaming, real hot war in the Middle East. And rather than Trump taking the peace road, forcing Netanyahu to de-escalate in Gaza, which could really turn down the burner on tensions across the region, Trump is going to embrace the warfare and just, full on engage in a already a raging war.
Like Obama left a mess for Trump, I think Biden is going to leave a mess for Trump. Okay, very interesting
Can
how
I
he's. It's very interesting how Biden is bookended here by Trump. I'm sorry, gentlemen, but we're all out of time. I want to thank my guests in Norton, Tampa, and in Dallas, and of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.